Hey everybody, it's Darius Farooq, and you're listening to the Total Recall podcast series. On this podcast series, we talk about improving the ROI of learning, and this is the last episode where Monish and I talk about our favorite books on learning. So we will not share like summaries of our favorite books, but we'll talk about them on a high level and why they inspired us to learn more. So what we thought about doing is just listing our books first, and after that have a little bit of a discussion of what we've learned from these books so we can share the takeaways with you. So I'll immediately just kick this off by sharing my top three books, and then Manish and I can talk about it. So my first recommendation is Mastery by George Leonard. My second book is Zen in the Art of Writing by Ray Bradbury. And my final recommendation is How to Read a Book by Mortimer Adler. So what was your first response when I shared my books?
Yeah, first response was, first off, I've read Mastery Leonard, so by Leonard, and also I've read most of How to Read a Book. But the other response was with the Bradbury. For me, I'm curious how these books have actually impacted, sort of like when, in what specific ways did these books sort of
We've been doing these episodes now. This is the third one. We've been talking a lot about learning, and I personally don't have a very systematic approach when it comes to learning, and the reason that I'm not sharing books that are specifically about learning, right? Because there are a lot of books that just give you like a system for learning more or more effectively, mm-hmm. etc. And I've read several of those books as well, and even while I found some good information in those books, it didn't really stick with me because it's not a good match with my personality. I just like to be more, flexible and fluent. And the reason that I'm sharing these books, particularly Mastery and Zen and the Art of Writing, is because these books were kind of influenced by Zen philosophy and Eastern philosophy. And it's all about focusing on the process when you are learning a skill, particularly. And obviously, because I write, I found a lot of good information, a lot of inspiration in Ray Bradbury's book. And it really changed my outlook on learning, because as you grow up and you go to school, often learning is something that's forced on you, right? And I had that idea as well for many years, and this is actually why I did not read a single book, or not as like maybe that's exaggerated, but I didn't read many books after I graduated for I think about 4 years or so. I read one or two books, and that was because I was just kind of tired of reading and learning.
Totally.
And at some point I discovered one of these books. I can't remember exactly which ones I read first, but and got introduced to the whole Eastern philosophy and focusing on the process, not the destination. I think this is the key lesson that I've learned about learning, and that is it can become just a means to an end. And mm-hmm. and in fact, this is how education is built. It's always a means, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's really a bad way to look at learning, because if you're always thinking to yourself, okay, this book or this practice will only is just like a vehicle that brings me to an end, then you just kind of don't take it seriously, don't enjoy it. You just rush it. You just want to get to the end, right? Like, okay, I need to learn this, or I need to read this book, or like whatever it is. You're learning at school. You're getting slides or some material, some lessons. because I want to pass this test, and I want to pass this test because I want to get my degree, and then because I want to get my degree, I want to do and so forth. So
yeah,
this is the whole idea that I just want to get rid of, or wanted to get rid of, and that this is why that I'm sharing particularly these two books, and then the last one, How to Read a Book, is kind of to balance it out. We mm-hmm. can talk about that later. Like this is for me the most important thing, and this is what I'd love to share with everybody who's listening. And these books, particularly Mastery and Zen in the Art of Writing, will help you to adopt that mindset and learn how to enjoy the process.
Yeah, I think you're making a pretty subtle point here, right? Because it's sort of this weird lens that's overlaid on how we view the things we want to be doing. So you don't even see the lens operating when you are choosing your goals. You're picking what to learn. You're picking what books to read. You're picking what things to do, activities, whatever. But the lens is kind of what you're talking about, which is that it's about the result, right? There's a result orientation. This also might be sort of an artifact of Western culture, right? But there is sort of this mm-hmm. idea that the end is the only thing that matters. The result is what matters. And results, of course, they matter, right? But also, you're also living your life, right? And I think one of the things that sort of paradoxically supercharges kind of the learning experience is not just sort of focusing on the result. What can I get out of this book? What can I get out of X, Y, and Z? What can I get if I learn this skill? But also really sort of focusing the gravity of your efforts toward enjoying the process, liking the process. In fact, so for me, mm-hmm. for me, man, the what has made me love learning has not been setting these linear goals and just sort of going after them. What's made me love learning is when I'm reading and I'm enjoying myself, right? So when you have that sort of experience of just like you're reading a book and then you actually enjoy the experience of reading the book, that is something that you want to repeat just intrinsically, right? Outside of any context of a goal or an end result. And honestly, man, dude, it's kind of a lesson for life, right? A little bit, right? Results obviously matter, and there's always going to be sort of tasks and things you got to be doing where you might not actually enjoy the process, but the result is what matters. But I also think that things kind of work best when you sort of when you combine both, right? The result is something that you want, but it's intrinsically the thing that you're doing is also sort of enjoyable, right? Just due to the nature of the thing itself. So yeah, I 1000% agree. I think that school and college, and I think again, the people in these institutions are well-meaning, but I think the institution itself, from what I understand, I've read a lot about the history of sort of education. And the one piece that always stuck out to me was that the education model actually came from Prussia, right? And the idea was essentially it wasn't about how to educate people, but it was about how to turn people sort of into factory workers, right? Which is, again, doesn't sort of place the individual in a context where I think it would be healthy for that person. It's more, how do we get this end result to where we have this wonderful factory worker? And so I think this model, this lens, it's invisible because you can barely see it, right? But I think cutting through that illusion, cutting through that lens, is actually critical. So
for me it's all about finding that balance between focusing on the process and also keeping your goals in mind. So in the last episode we talked about trying to get the most out of a book, and we continuously related that to our goals, right? Like, what do we want to achieve with this book? If it's not serving you, it's okay to just, mm-hmm. Stop reading the book. So that's why I really wanted to share these books here, because the learning process can also become too goal-oriented. So I wanted just to balance things out. I was like, hey, and I recommend this, and just for clarity, like I recommend these books to my friends, family, everybody, right? When they talk about learning and say, oh, I just want to like pick up a new skill, I want to improve my writing or whatever it is, my drawing, any creative skill or any technical skill, whether that's programming, it doesn't really matter. I always want to challenge people to think about the process itself as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because right now it's very popular, and I actually talked about this as well, to look at income generating skills. And obviously, what's the number one skill that everybody loves to acquire? Programming.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yeah. A lot of people talk about it, and people love this. So, but the thing is, I don't think you can be a really good programmer if you truly do not like the process of programming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe you could, get a job and earn a living. But the people that I know, that we've hired and that we've worked with at our family business, we create software for the industrial laundry business, and we work with multiple programmers. All these guys, they just love talking about this stuff like all day long, and they just love it, right? And I see it. And I've also seen people, come into that business, like talking about this stuff, but that they weren't that excited about it. And mm-hmm. I'm still talking about programming. And they just got out of it, and I didn't see them again, mm-hmm. or they got burnt out. This is a very important point to just always keep in mind. Are you actually enjoying the process of learning, whether it is for your personal life or professional life, doesn't matter. I always like to do something or learn something that I enjoy. And if I don't enjoy it, I'd rather focus on something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Life's too short to just do stuff that you want to bang your head against the wall when you're doing it. Right. So I think that there is a differential between sort of you convincing yourself because of other people that you should do mm-hmm. something versus you actually intrinsically wanting to do something sort of irrespective of what other people feel about it, right? So, for example, I had sort of a conversation in the sounding board, right? And one of the conversation was this person was talking about their novel, right? And they were talking about sort of how they felt like they just didn't really want to do the novel. It wasn't really mm-hmm. coming along. And so one idea that I put out there, and one idea I think happens a lot because I see it within myself a lot, right, is that I think society has these sort of ideas about what's healthy, what's cool, what's high status, what you should be doing, what someone your age should be doing, what someone, mm-hmm. if you're in the specific institution, should be doing. And so we take those ideas on, and we retroactively convince ourselves that this is what I want to be doing. So, for example, yeah. as of 21st century America, United States right now, writing a novel, right, and putting out a novel is very high status, right? Depending on who you are.
Writing any kind of book, right?
Yeah. It's very high status. It's high prestige. And so there is sort of a glamour that society puts on top of books that, for example, that glamour doesn't really exist with different sort of domains of or different types of art. And mm-hmm. so it's easy to sort of see that message from society or see that cultural value, retroactively convince yourself, I need to write a novel, right? Try to mm-hmm. write it, and then not actually enjoy the process. And you're kind of confused. Why isn't it coming? Why am I not enjoying this? But you still feel like you need to do this, right? There's that, right? There's sort of loving the idea of something rather than the thing itself. And then there's sort of when you actually line up the things that you're learning about, line up your goals, your career choices based on things that you intrinsically enjoy, irrespective of what other people.
So this is actually a really good point. So I get a lot of emails from people saying, oh, you know, I want to do this, and can you share some tips on how I can make it easier? And there can be all kinds of things, right? Things that people want to achieve, but let's pick the writing a novel as an example. In my experience, if something doesn't come automatic, right, or doesn't, like, at least it just feel, it should feel natural a little bit. If you're picking up something new, let's say, okay, you want to write a novel, and you're just like total blank space,
yeah,
like a blank page for like 6 months, right? Like not not one paragraph. Maybe just move on to something else, yeah. Right?
Yeah,
you know, like that's pretty tough to hear, but. I'm sure that if you're writing a novel, like it should come a little bit automatic. It's not easy work. That's not what I'm saying, but it shouldn't be like this type of crazy work that you just beat yourself up to get one sentence.
100%. There's a difference between when you're doing any kind of project, there's going to be times when you're like, man, today I really don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Or like, this is coming a little harder than it was before. That stuff, reality is reality. Yeah. That stuff totally exists. But the thing is that on the opposite end, right? On the opposite end, it shouldn't be like the whole, you don't know where to start. You don't know how to write a word. You don't know, you don't have an idea. You don't know. And it shouldn't be everything coming hard. It doesn't, nothing is flowing. Everything is just, it's mm-hmm. too much. Like there's always some middle ground. There's always sort of that Aristotelian mean to everything, right? So you got to find, I think, the activities that sort of...
Yeah, everybody has those, right? You just have to find it.
Yeah, totally. And I think sort of, here's the thing, people, what you said, you were saying, basically what you just kind of said was the sentiment was, you know, if you're staring at a blank page for 6 months, you know, maybe you should move on. People mm-hmm. don't say this, right? People, the prevailing sentiment is you can learn anything you want, you can learn any skill you want, and I think it's true that you can get competent in nearly any skill, but your argument is actually more subtle. Your argument is more, well, you can get good at any skill, and again, reality is reality, so there are some skills you'll just have to pick up, and you might not even like them. It's, you know, it's life a little bit, but for the most part, if you're going to be spending your time, right, and again, you're going to if you're listening to this, you're probably going to die of old age in 60, 70 years, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to waste your time on things that just, I think, you don't intrinsically...
This is actually a very good one. So it is very subtle. And so again, this, you might listen to this and think, oh, well, in that example, should that person stop writing altogether? Well, actually, no, because... I'm talking about myself. So when I got out of college, I wanted to write a novel, and that was me, right? 6 months, mm-hmm. nothing. So I was like, screw this, I'm not going to write. So I just basically gave up. But I did not give up learning about writing, the skill of writing. So you could apply the skill of writing to something else. So later on, I obviously applied it to nonfiction. So... Mm-hmm. Let's say you want to learn a skill, but you're applying it in the wrong way, or maybe you do like the program, but you don't like the program, like technical solutions for B2B, you know, for the B2B industry or whatever. You love to work on consumer products.
Mm-hmm.
Great, go and do that. So it's all about, you know, how you... utilize the skill that you're trying to improve, and just enjoying that particular style of applying that skill. And I think like most skills are subtle like this. Like for example, I this year I picked up archery, and I really enjoy the whole process, you know, of, you know, just grabbing a bow and putting the arrow on it, and like the whole process, like aiming. And I also did it with my brother, and he just, like, to him is like, yeah, I don't like it at all. He doesn't see the subtleties and he doesn't see the steps that are involved. So why do it? Just because it's cool or anything, right? Like you said?
Right.
No, not at all. Like, so what? You just go and do something else. Those type of things are quite straightforward. You either like it or you don't. But other things like writing, programming, like most creative work, is very subtle. Sometimes people give up doing a certain creative pursuit or learning a creative skill because they have one single bad experience of in a particular industry or whatever, and they give it up. Like I could have given up writing because I hated writing novels. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do it. It's just not my strength. So I could have said, well, I'm not going to write anymore. So like, you should never do that as well. Like, just try to expand your horizon.
This is cool because I've actually never seen someone bring this point up, but I think when you're moving, I think that the key sort of the compass here, right, for this discussion is if you're going to do it in the right way, right? If you're going to move on, do it in the right way. If you're going to stick with something, you want to make sure you're doing that in the right way, right? So mm-hmm. when you're moving on to something else, right, it is totally possible that the way in which you do move on is not actually reflective of the reality of your situation. So for example, I when you said, like, I didn't like writing novels, but I could have given up the prospect of writing entirely. I think that actually happens a lot more. Like, I think that experience is a lot more common. Right?
Oh yeah, that's why I started a writing course. I was like, I want to inspire people. Just, you can write, but maybe you can't write a novel like I.
Totally. It's like, I think we have these ideas. Like, so essentially, we basically try something out, right? We have a collection of experiences. From that collection of experiences, we try to glean a lesson. But I think the lesson that we glean, we process it through our rational mind, sort of uses language to sort of figure things out. And unfortunately, we don't, sometimes we just will, the label will be, oh, this means I don't like writing, right? And in fact, I think closing yourself off to experiences like that can be counterproductive. I think you should just be like, okay, look, I tried to write a novel. I tried to write this type of novel. Just try to keep it specific, right? Okay, maybe I don't like writing. Let's say, for example, you're writing a mystery novel. Maybe I don't like writing mystery novels in the first person. And then try something else. You don't want to do this thing where you have one bad experience and you close yourself off into entire domains of experience. And because there is such a thing as, you know, trying too many things, right? And doing stuff you hate, and doing stuff you hate because other people are telling you to do it. But there is also such a thing as sort of just closing yourself off, thinking that, oh, well, I'm not into writing, I'm not into this, I'm not into that, I don't really like that. And that both problems can exist at the same time. So.
Yeah, definitely. And this kind of, you know, maybe is a good segue to the last book that I shared, How to Read a Book, because you're kind of sharing a systematic approach to, if this doesn't work, I might try this. When I was reading How to Read a Book, I was thinking to myself, well, hey, this is kind of too much for me. If you have not read that book by Adler, it's basically, I don't know how to describe it. It's just like a complicated system or a very comprehensive system for reading a book. He just outlines multiple steps and he says, okay, first go read the back cover and then do this and then skim through the book, read the first page of every chapter and then read the last book or page of the chapter and on and on. I read the book and I'm not, now, like years later, I'm not applying that to my reading and learning strategy. However, what I am applying, and that's why I'm sharing it here, this is the main lesson that I learned from Adler's book, is that, hey, specifically if you're reading a nonfiction book, it's okay to start with the end. You're not reading a novel, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay to be a little bit systematic about the book that you're reading, and particularly it's okay to skip certain parts of the book. And this is the thing that Adler highlights. He goes like, I think he says something like, you know, the main lessons are on the first page and on the last page of every chapter.
Unloaded, yeah.
Yeah, right? And he's like, yeah, just read that stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And if you like it, just read the whole chapter, or like it probably goes a lot deeper. I can't recall everything, but I do apply that to almost every single book that I read. And that's why I want to share this book here. And I highly recommend it. And it's okay to skip some of that book as well.
Yeah, like, yeah. Because
sometimes it just gets too much. So I still do that. You know, I might read something and certain aspects, particularly in the middle of chapters, I feel like, yeah, you know, it's just repetitive and I get the point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, you know, skip that aspect or that part of the book. So
yeah,
that's something that I like to do.
You don't. Yeah. So, but so you might have heard that and thought like, oh, so, you know, Adler just reads the beginning of the book and then he reads the end. He doesn't really. No. Adler is yeah. hardcore as it gets. Yeah. Right.
That's just step one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So one of the lines, so I've read maybe 80% of that book, and one of the lines in that book that stuck with me was essentially like something to the effect that a good book needs to be read like three times or something insane like that, right?
Yeah.
So Adler's pretty intense.
Well, I agree with that, actually. By the way, just to interrupt you, a really good book, I do read multiple times.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like that is good that you brought this up. So like I kind of pick that up from him as well. It's like, yeah, it's good to, if you like a book, just, you know, study it.
Totally, totally. Yeah, so I've never reread, I don't think I've reread a book three times. I've definitely reread a book twice before. But I've done the experience of just sort of like going through different passages, right? Mm. And sort of just rereading the book, sort of just different chapters or whatever. So essentially, I think the thrust of Adler's argument, though, which I found really cool, was that every book, again, you kind of alluded to this, is that every book is unique, right? Some books you just want to read, you know, a couple pages, right? Some books you want to read through them multiple times. You want to keep them on your shelf. You want to go back to them. You want to reread passages. You want to use them over and over again. You want to talk about them in conversation. So I think what I love about Adler is that he understands that not every book, at least to you, right? Because you are also a unique person interacting with a unique object. Not every book is worth the same. You don't have to read every book from page one to the last. And I think that sort of the fact that it's weird. So there's these kind of invisible scripts that happen with reading. One of the invisible scripts, again, it's sort of this weird, invisible, non-existent contract that we sort of write in agreement with everybody else, is that if you buy a book, you got to read the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also that for some reason you're indebted to the author. People feel like kind of this weird sense of guilt, like, I have this book sitting around. I haven't read it. But the thing is, that contract doesn't actually exist. That's just a line in everybody's head that we've sort of repeated about what a book is and what a book should be and how we should consume books. And I think you should have a library, right, full of lovely books where some books, just because you were interested in chapter 13, you read chapter 13. Some books you've read multiple times. Some books you've read once and you maybe read chapter 16 again because it was useful. Some books you read the first few pages and then you were like, not for me. And then you just let it go. Right.
Yeah, I've had that multiple times.
Yeah.
Last one, I've had that multiple times. Like I read a couple pages and I'm like, yeah, not now. And then a year later, this book is awesome.
Yeah. Amazon, the look inside feature in Amazon is your friend. So I try to use that and I will immediately sort of get a gestalt for the book, be like, okay, I'm probably not going to like this. or oh, yeah, it's probably not worth my time, though it, you know, it can depend. So
yeah, so you know, that closes off my, you know, top three books. The first two are really about the process, and the last one is a very systematic approach, probably the most systematic approach
you'll find,
but it's very enjoyable. And then you know, if you take away some stuff that you can apply. So what are your books, Monish, that you recommend?
Totally. So again, it's kind of the same. So what's weird about this, so before the podcast, where the idea here was we're going to talk about books that informed our learning. What was cool was that a lot of what informed my learning was, again, not the books that were explicitly about learning, which, because I've read those books, right?
Yeah.
And for whatever, in the actual experience of reading those books, I was thinking to myself, this is great. Like, this is awesome. I can't wait to do this. And then I didn't actually apply it, or I didn't really use it, or it didn't really change my life in any real way. So these books are less sort of explicitly, I mean, so they are in one sense about learning, but they're more the books that I took ideas from and actually changed how I viewed learning, right? So the first one is about learning to some degree, but it's also about cooking, and it's called The 4-Hour Chef. so a real quick story that will sort of contextualize this. So when I was in college, I was chopping a bell pepper. And then, so I was chopping this bell pepper with this dull knife, and I start cutting it. And the idea was I was going to make this egg bell pepper surprise for my girlfriend. And as I was chopping it, I'm chopping it. And then I just go straight to my thumb. So I've just chopped my thumb, right? So now it's bleeding profusely. At first I'm just kind of like, all right, this will be fine. An hour goes by, it's been a bit, and it's still bleeding a lot. I run out of the sink, and my girlfriend, she's coming in, she's helping me out, and she sees she sees
chopped
how
off,
much I'm bleeding.
Chopped off thumb.
yeah. She left the state. No. She saw how much I was bleeding, and then she fainted for like maybe 2 seconds. So I was like, what are you doing at first? But then, so I kind of caught her, and then she was just like, yeah, she just doesn't really like seeing blood. And by the way, she works outdoors, very tough, whatever. But for whatever reason, I think just we hadn't eaten that morning, and you know, it was a lot to see in the morning. And so I went to the ER, right? So that is one small factor connected in multiple factors into why I felt like I needed to learn the skill of cooking or I was going to die. Right. So,
yeah,
so
that's a good
right,
one.
Right. So I like, so yeah, right.
The
so
urgency
I,
was there, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it was that plus a lot of other really compelling reasons. That's sort of the most interesting reason, but I picked up The 4-Hour Chef, and what was so cool about it was in that book, he has this full system for how to learn, how to break ideas down, how to whatever. And I remember reading it and I remember thinking, this is great, right? I was like, this is fantastic. And then I didn't apply any of it. But what I did apply was that I actually did, so he has maybe, I think, a collection of 20 meals, right? And the idea is that when you cook the first meal, the second, the third, the fourth, you cook one maybe every week or maybe twice a week, whatever schedule you want, you can slowly learn the skill of cooking. And what was really cool about that experience, again, the lesson here was more experiential than it was sort of intellectually that came from the book. But the skill was that, you know, if you get really into a skill, and this kind of goes against kind of what we were talking about a little bit in the beginning, but I think both kind of exist in the same time. But yeah, if you kind of learn a skill, you can kind of learn to at least appreciate it, right? I was not really sort of into cooking, and it was more something I needed to learn out of urgency or else I was going to die. But I, like when I started cooking and sort of when I became more and more competent at the act of in the skill of cooking, the more I just kind of was like, oh, you know, I kind of get this. I understand why people watch cooking shows now. I understand why, you know, Rachel Ray is so appealing. And I was watching, for example, Kitchen Nightmares with Gordon Ramsay pretty much every day. I got into a big cooking phase, and that was extremely useful. And it just sort of, it gave me kind of a very visceral confidence, right? That even skills that seem like they can't, even skills that seem like they're hard or they can't be learned or that seem kind of far away from my own zone of experience can be learned, right? If you just dive in, right? And so that, again, the lesson there was more experiential than it was intellectual from the book, but the book itself was kind of a great catalyst for that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I remember reading that book as well, or at least, you know, browsing through it. And what I got from that book was just the level of detail that, you know, Tim brings to, you know, the skill of cooking, and then how deep he goes. And that kind of inspired me as well to apply that kind of strategy to the things that I'm passionate about and interested in, right? So what I got from that book is like, oh, look at Tim Ferriss. He's basically breaking down the skill of cooking in like a, I don't know, 600-700 page book or something. I don't know, like 500 pages, whatever it is. It's a big book. A lot of images and you know, he talks about multiple subjects. Talks about hunting as well, I think. So I was like, wow, you know, like the seriousness of this approach as well. He's just not like, oh, here are a couple of meals, because most books,
right, yeah.
He's like, here are a couple of meals, right? And here's how you cook them. But no, but this guy is like, this is how you actually go and hunt. And how to use a gun, whatever. I really like that as well. Like not only for the cooking, but also just for like breaking things down to, you know, different kinds of steps and aspects of a particular skill, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I think he is, so in the book, I kind of make it seem like a little bit like I'm just kind of, I just cooked a ton of meals and then that was it. In 90%, 80%, it kind of was that. But a lot of it was, you know, cooking was extremely new to me at the time, right? It was just, it was, I mean, I've microwaved stuff before, right? But that's about it.
And most people just do it out of, at least this is how I did it. And, you know, when I was in college or whatever, or after that, just you do it from your own instinct, but also things that you saw around you growing up, or sort of like, oh, okay, you know, your parents did it this way, or you know, your partner or your friends did it this way, and like you pick it up instead of thinking to yourself, well, how does a chef do this, right? Instead of the people around me.
I mean, when you make meals out of that book, you're gonna feel confident in your ability to cook just from the fanciness of the stuff that you're making compared to, like, you know, the PB&J that you were trying to microwave last week. You know what I'm saying? So that, if you haven't learned to cook, would definitely recommend that as a starting point. That was sort of my launching pad. But as far as like what was really cool about in sort of the viewpoint of learning was that I loved Tim's progression, right? I've always sort of believed that if you're going to learn something, there should be a logical progression from, like, for example, if you're learning math, progression is not just some afterthought, it's paramount, right? You have to learn the numbers before you can learn algebra. You have to learn how to add, you have to learn how to divide, you have to, right? And then you place each block one by one. And with more sort of, with other topics, progression is sort of left out of the picture. And what was great about that book was that Tim is very intentional about this progression, where he makes sure that the first meal is very easy, right? the skills is are very, you just you play something in a pot. I believe it's an osso buco is the actual recipe. I could be wrong, but it's very, like, mechanically, it's not very intense, right? And then as you kind of go down the line, you sort of, you pick up skills. You start learning how to chop things with knives. He actually, I think, teaches you how to use a knife properly. And each skill, again, all of the skills that he's teaching you in that book, there is a Pareto effect, right? There's a Pareto principle in play, which is basically the idea that 20% of what you're doing has 80% of the rewards. And so I've always sort of believed, if you're, he has this line in that book that I have always loved, but essentially he says, the way he says it is something to the degree of, anyone can be competent in any skill or world-class in any skill in 6 months. For me, the way I took that was, anybody can be competent in a skill within 6 months. And I think that logical progression of going one by one, again, I think that was one thing that Tim did really well, but also he kind of figured out, okay, what are the 20% of cooking skills, the knife skills, the, you know, using a skillet, learning how to figure out temperature, salting things properly. What are the 20% of skills that are going to be applicable to 80% of the cooking you're going to be doing, right? And I think that was sort of the brilliance of the book, was that it kind of just had that.
So yeah, this is pretty interesting, because I kind of like that idea as well, especially when it comes to business and investing and capital allocation. But when it comes to learning, I try to don't go too extreme with that, because then it goes back to what we talked about, right? If I think too much of the Pareto principle,
I start
thinking about the end.
100%. Right?
Is only the Pareto principle only works if you think about some kind of end goal, right? Because otherwise,
sure.
Like, you know, what's the point? So
yeah.
I kind of like that, but more like in a sense, like you already talked about that, but just like making the process effective, and you still want to make some progress, right? And I really like that as well. Even if it's a hobby and you're learning something, you do want to make progress, right? And you talked about how he breaks it up in a book, and I that's something that I still enjoy, because the whole deliberate practice thing from Peak and Eric Anderson, that guy. So it's all about hitting a ball or shooting free throws. You know, 1,000 times will not necessarily make you better at shooting free throws if you disregard technique and, you know, everything else that's involved with this. So it's all about, this kind of comes back to this 80-20 thing. It's like you do want to focus on things that actually make you better in the skill, not necessarily because you want to use it for something, but just for yourself. You just want to get better. Yeah. And that's why I really like this, man. So what's your number two pick?
Totally. So number two pick is Mastery, right? But it's
this time by another author.
Yeah. It's by a different author. So Robert Greene. And what I loved about the book, the book is wonderful. I'm a little biased. So when I was younger, I actually worked through Ryan Holiday's. He has a marketing firm currently, but it's called Brass Check, and was able to work on some cool projects for Robert's book launch for Mastery. But even irrespective of that, I loved the book, and I have two copies of the book, and one is, it's got a nice little personal note. So the book is, emotionally to me, it means a lot, and just because it was one of my sort of earlier career experiences that I felt was really special. And so that might have also been a reason why I was sort of pulled into the book. But again, I think irrespective of those experiences, the book, there's a spirit to the book, right? And the spirit is almost so much more powerful than almost the actual specific details of the book itself. at times, right? Because there's a lot of, I actually encourage anyone to read the book because I think the book is wonderful. I think you'll glean a lot of ideas about the creative process, about understanding, about skills, about the human brain, about the plasticity, about the human brain. It's wonderful.
And how has it helped you to learn, right?
Yes. The spirit of the book, there is a sort of this feeling. And the feeling is, if you're going to do a craft in your career, right, do something that you sort of intrinsically love. Do something that's connected to who you are as a person. And do something that you are willing to master, to be good at. When I say it like that, that maybe I'm not giving voice to the spirit of the book, but when you read the book, you'll feel it. It's this very sort of this historical work that just kind of really, you start reading biographies of different people, of Darwin, of Benjamin Franklin, of Mozart, and you get this feeling.
That's what it is, right? Like it's basically a collection of, like 12 or something? Biographies?
Yeah, so there's contemporary masters, there's also older masters, and basically you read these biographies, and it fills you up with this sort of, this zest to sort of just go after. So again, from just a,
it's
a
good inspiration to see how people became really good at what they do, right?
100%. So from just an inspirational perspective, the book is wonderful. But the book also had a couple of ideas that. So I know this first idea definitely came from the book, and that's where I took it from. The second idea, I'm not sure if I just if the book reinforced it or if it was coming from somewhere else. But the first idea is essentially this idea that what you do should, this is more about your career. So what your career should be going towards, what you're going to spend most of your time, it should be aligned with your primal inclinations, what you did as a kid, or not just what you did as a kid, but sort of the fact that your childhood is going to give you clues, and those clues are going to point probably to some general framework or a loose framework of what you should be doing. Doesn't mean just because, like, when you were three, you loved swimming, you loved to swim, doesn't mean you have to be a professional swimmer. But what it does mean is that look at what your childhood was like, look at what sort of you did in the early ages before anybody else could tell you what to do. And those are usually, those patterns, those clues usually add up to, oh, this is what I like to do. For example, when I was really young, and this is before other people could tell me, oh, you should learn physics or you should learn to code because it's cool, it's high status, it's high prestige. When you're a kid, you don't have any of that. You're just doing things because you want to do them. And that's sort of why we're looking at this period of your life. But when I was a kid, I just kind of learned very instinctively, and looking back at it, that I love, right? Whether it was art or it was writing or it was creating stories. And so that has always stuck with me as sort of a core part of what I love to do. And the thing is that I could have easily have forgotten that lesson. You know, I could have easily have tried to become a doctor, or, you know, tried to just do something else and be like, oh, well, you know, the reasonable thing to do. Yeah, I could have done anything else, but I think the book was incredibly impactful for me because it really just it made me sort of just, it upped the intensity as far as trying to stay true to my own sense of individuality. So yeah, that was kind of the big one from that book. The second one, I don't know if it came from, I know it's in the book, I don't know if this is where I learned it from, but it's kind of just an idea, is I think that this idea, you should always have a blend in your creative work. And in what you learn, and it's all like you, it's not just about learning the rational, it's not just about learning from the creative, it's not just learning from the arts, it's about kind of learning from it all, right? And seeing the connections between the things and understanding that the sciences can complement, you know, maybe the social sciences, and that economics can complement science, and just basically just the idea that different disciplines can sort of complement each other versus sort of just being focused on one thing. And that's sort of again, that book was kind of what is one reason why my library, I think, or at least this idea is one reason why my library kind of ranges in a lot of different topics. Right. So.
Yeah, I kind of picked those things up as well from Robert Greene's Mastery, and I like, because it was funny. So when we were talking about our books before we started recording, I thought you were going a very systematic way, because these books are pretty big books. Like the books that I recommend, that's specifically Mastery by Leonard and Zen in the Art of Writing, are, you know, very, very thin, or relatively thin, especially Mastery is like a very small one. And it's all about the whole, like, the spirit and all that kind of stuff. But these books that you shared are, you know, complex and go very deep.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, maybe you want to focus on the whole, you know, systematic approach to learning. And we talked about that kind of, right? Like, you know, breaking things down and going very deep. But you picked up these different things from it. And just to pursue, you know, what you're naturally good at, and try to be very good at those things. And funny enough, those other books also talk about these things. And but Mastery by Greene just gives a lot of examples. And I think if you learn from stories about other people's lives, I think this is probably one of the best books you could read on learning. So good pick.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So, we can sort of go to the depth of the next book, but the next book is also by Robert Greene. But it was the only thing that was sort of relevant to learn. I mean, so the book is wonderful. It's actually one of my favorite books that I've ever read. But it's called The Laws of Human Nature. And the reason that I'm picking it for this one is because I think it was just a couple of paragraphs. But these couple of paragraphs have really stuck. And what it was, again, it's going to start off not making sense and it'll make sense. The book was actually about, I believe, sort of reconnecting to your masculinity, or your sense of masculinity and your sense of femininity, right? So again, you're probably hearing this, you're like, I have no idea where this is going, but here's where it's going. So essentially, the book talks about, with regards to learning, his argument that he makes in the book is that there are sort of cultural patterns in behavior that are sort of masculine, that can be feminine, and essentially some are from culture, right? Some are just societal, and some are actually biological. But one of the sort of the patterns that he sort of picks out is that there are essentially that there's feminine styles of learning, and that there are masculine styles of learning. And regardless of whether or not, you know, if you're listening to this, regardless of whether or not you buy the argument that there are masculine styles of learning and feminine styles of learning, the idea, what I liked about this section was really that there are different styles of doing the same thing, if that makes sense. And
I think for example, I might have skipped that part because I did read it.
I read
the book, but I can't remember this.
Right. Yeah. So, well, it's a dense book. It's got 3,000. It's nuts.
Exactly.
So it's easy. It's really easy to not know what I'm talking about, even if you read the book. But essentially, he talks about the feminine style being where they see things from sort of a very wide angle, right? They like to connect things across domains of experience. They like to see the whole gestalt. They like to they'll go from one thing to the next, from one subject to the next. And what was really interesting was that, obviously, I'm a guy. If you're listening to this, that should be clear. But what's interesting is that when I read that section, I actually totally identified with all of the feminine styles of learning, the feminine styles of acting, and all of that stuff. May or may not have something to do with the fact that, you know, most of my family, I was raised with a sister and a mom versus, you know, me and my dad. But basically what was interesting here was that his directive was that if you feel like you lean in one direction, right? It could be the masculine style, could be the feminine style. Both styles are incredibly useful. You should supplement, you should use both, right, accordingly. And so, for example, the masculine style, just to explain that, is more focusing on one single topic, going really deep into one topic, really sort of breaking it apart, really sort of looking at it from the inside out.
The chef, right?
Yeah.
Example.
Totally. Right? And so when I read that, I was immediately like, oh, you know, I think the feminine style of learning, as Green describes, is wonderful. And in fact, I've always believed that it's sort of the best way to learn. But I also kind of could recognize in that moment of reading that passage that, oh, you know, I bet if I did both, not just one, if I complemented sort of going from different thing to different thing to different thing and learning widely, which I want to keep because I think it's a critical skill, but also adding to that sort of, you know, if I want to learn about a topic more deeply, kind of adding that and doing that more often, I think that would sort of, that just sort of makes what you're learning more powerful in general. So for me, that was sort of very influential in sort of how I viewed learning in general. So,
yeah. I'm glad we talked about this last, because this is, I think, a great sentiment and idea and just the overall lesson to end our series on, because what it comes down to, basically what the point that you made, is that you don't have to be like Tim Ferriss, or you don't have to be like, I don't know, Susan Cain. You don't have to be like any other person that you might see on the internet or person that you might read their books. Just do what comes natural to you, and then apply some system to it. You know, we talked about the note-taking system in a previous episode. If you haven't checked that out, feel free to check that out. But you always try to stick to your nature, your own, like what comes natural to you, and then you try to make that more, you know, or try to systemize it if that's, you know, something that you like. And if you don't like it and you still make progress, that's fine too, because at the end of the day, I think we talked about a lot of different topics, and hopefully it kind of makes sense if you listen to listen to all these episodes or these three episodes. You know, like, this is how I keep learning. I try to explore what I'm interested in, but I also look at my progress. I want to keep improving, I want to make it fun, but also useful at the same time. And I think those are the things that I always focus on myself. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, so what's interesting is that we've been talking about learning and all of these things and being sort of just sort of the process and sort of, and I was talking about Pareto principles and all these other things. But honestly, one thing that has just been sort of central is just learning and learning to love learning. And once you start loving learning, you just pick up books that you like, books that you want to do. You start just diving into skills. And it doesn't, at least to me in my life at this point, I could change in 10 years. But right now, when I want to pick something up, like a topic, I want to learn about a topic, I just try to pick up a book that goes over the fundamentals, right? Again, that linear progression idea, deliberate as it might seem. All it is just, oh, well, the first book, if I'm going to learn about a new topic, the first book should go over the very basics, right?
Sure.
And really, yeah, I read and I do things that are fun. I do things that are sort of, I try to do things that are intrinsically enjoyable. I just kind of, if I want to learn a new skill, I just kind of dive headfirst into it, kind of don't think about it too much. If it doesn't seem to be going well, I try to sort of diagnose why. But yeah, this process is so much more loose than I think it might seem at first glance. And again, it's just, I think, loving that process, doing what works for you. I think all of these directives can be really useful. So
yeah, and the final thing that I'd like to share is that You should never allow anything or anyone take away your pleasure in learning. So
yeah,
if you see anything that happens and you think to yourself, oh, I'm starting to dislike learning, or I'm starting to feel like a little bit negative towards learning and I don't enjoy it, like stop it right there and don't allow it, because learning ultimately is a pleasurable thing. So Monish, to wrap this series off, what's the best way for the listeners to connect with you or follow your work?
Yeah, so basically I have this website. It's www.monish.net. I think I said this before, but most people don't know how to spell Monish, but it's MOHNISH.net. So Monish.net, I think the link should be in the show notes. And basically I've got this book. It's called How to Take Notes at the Speed of Light. You can sort of get basically the quick idea there is just, how do you 10x the ROI on your learning, right? How do you just make sure that every book you're reading, every podcast, every YouTube video that you're consuming, how do you, you know, make the most of it, right? And so if you want to get the system for free, you can actually sign up for the email list at www.monish.net. And also there's a reading list. So I have my own reading list, and the idea there is kind of twofold. One is I try to be reasonable with the books, right? I'm not just trying to suggest books that, you know, make me look smart or make me look very high status, because mm-hmm. they're so hard. I try to suggest books that really did make an impact, right? Whether they're easy or they are hard. And that really, I felt like we're really good. And also the second reason is because I think when you learn, you kind of talk about this in your article about having sort of a rich mind, right? But when you learn and you're learning skills and you're reading, your mind, it kind of just, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe, but it kind of becomes this colorful place, right? It's like mm-hmm. there's more dimensionality to it. It becomes more finer. It feels a little bit more, you see the world through a more nuanced view. And I think part of doing that is finding the right stuff and finding the right books. And so that the list is kind of my way of helping people discover that on their own. So again, it's monish.net, and feel free to reach out.
All right.
So
thanks for being on this series. It was really good to talk about these things, and obviously the first series that I had a special guest on, so that was pretty cool as well. And for regular stuff, everybody, if you're not on my email list, feel free to check that out. And the thing that I always end this thing on is feel free to check the description for any links that we talked about. And like always, until the next series this time, take care.